If you flew within the United States during June of this year, your passenger record may soon be sent to the Transportation Security Administration. The TSA wants to use the information to test a new screening system that matches passenger names against lists of known or suspected terrorists. The new program is called Secure Flights. It would replace the current airline screening system. Privacy advocates are worried the information will be used for purposes beyond identifying terrorists. Somebody who came up against the current airline screening system today is former pop singer Cat Stevens. Yusuf Islam, as he is now known, is on his way back to London after his plane was diverted to Maine. U.S. Customs officials made that decision when they saw his name show up on a government no-fly list. In this segment, we'll discuss the latest program to screen airline passengers and prevent terrorists from boarding commercial jets. Where do you draw the line between privacy and security? What's your flying experience been like since September 11th? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Mark Hatfield joins us now from his office in Northern Virginia. He's the Director of Communications and Public Information for the Transportation Security Administration. Mr. Hatfield, thanks for being with us.
Corva, thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
Mr. Hatfield, can you tell us how the Secure Flight Program will work?
I can. In fact, anybody who's interested in following this can log on to TSA's website or check with the Federal Register now, because we have posted the most explicit details and description of what the program is and how it will function, and we're looking for public comment on it. Essentially, what we're looking to do is take a function that is now handled by the airlines, and that's the checking of names, passenger names against the no-fly and selectee lists. Take that responsibility from the airlines and move it to the government so that the airlines will be relieved of that burden and the function can actually be done more efficiently and against a greater range of terrorist databases. So we're looking to improve the efficiency of it and the effectiveness of it, and at the end of the day, make the customer service better, because it should result in fewer misidentifications or false positives.
Mr. Hatfield, what website should people visit?
www.tsa.gov.
And there'll be a link there that people can use to comment?
There will indeed.
So is that the overall goal of the program, to improve efficiency and customer service?
Well, the overall goal is always to improve security, but we've also got a very strong commitment to customer service. So we look at the balance. We always look at ways that we can improve the customer experience and marry that up with our very strong commitment, our primary commitment, to create the safest transportation modes in the world.
Okay, I need to know exactly how this program is going to work. I show up, say, at BWI Airport, Baltimore Washington Airport. What can I expect in my line?
Well, first of all, what happens as far as Secure Flight is concerned is virtually transparent to the passenger, especially when you compare it to what happens today. And it actually starts back when you make your reservation. So let's say that you are a planner and that you think far ahead and you want the better deals and you buy your ticket 2 months in advance. Right now, today, that information goes into the passenger name records that the airlines each individually maintain. And at some point prior to your showing up on the day of flight and requesting your boarding pass, the airlines have to check your name against the list that we provide them for selectees and for no-fly individuals. Instead of having that continue, what we will do is have the airlines pass those passenger name records to us. We'll check the names against not only the list that the airlines use today, but a broader range of terrorist information databases, and then give the airlines instructions on whether to direct that individual passenger to secondary screening for a little closer look, or to call law enforcement, because in fact it's somebody who is a no-fly individual.
So if I show up and I go through all of this stuff, I'm going to still have to stand in a line, I'm still going to be asked if I've had my bags, and I still can be subjected to additional search. Is that so?
Well, actually, you haven't. The old rule of having the airline people ask you if you packed your own bags has been out of existence for over 2 years, so that's not part of the customer experience. But in fact, what you go through today, which is checking in either at an electronic kiosk or at a ticket counter, getting your boarding pass, either grabbing your carry-ons or waiting to check your check bags, then proceeding to the passenger checkpoint, all of that that experience is virtually unchanged by yesterday's announcement of the advancement of Secure Flight. What may actually be the net result is that fewer of you and your fellow travelers will be sent to the secondary screening corral, because one of the ultimate results of this will be that we're looking to reduce by at least half and maybe to a third the number of passengers who are selected every day to go through that extra screening that you see just beyond the checkpoint.
I think what I actually unclearly referred to was, have my bags been under my control since I left the house?
They don't ask you that anymore.
Actually, I have been.
Yeah, that was a pre-TSA rule, so it's no longer a rule if an individual airline employee did that on their own initiative. That's not a required rule. That's because we're now checking with electronic measures all checked bags. We're inspecting them for explosives, and we're also using a much better set of protocols for inspecting your carry-on bags.
Okay, let's jump to Jim in Lexington, Kentucky. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have been stopped 22 different times by the TSA, the FBI, and the Secret Service. My name is similar to that of another person in Chicago, Illinois, who is apparently a financier for Al-Qaeda. I have done everything possible to keep this from happening, and wanted to know if there's any advice you might be able to give me to get my name or my comparison name off this list.
Jim, have you contacted the TSA contact center and gone through the process of submitting your name and filling out the form so that we can take a look at why that might be happening? I can't address what's causing your experiences with the FBI or the Secret Service, but as far as the airport security experience, if you're getting selected for secondary screening or being delayed before you're allowed to board,
secondary screening. I've been pulled off to the tarmac in Denver and questioned by two Secret Service agents. A very embarrassing issue. And yes, I have been in contact with the TSA, and I've really had no recourse other than to get every frequent flyer card I can, and again to go one-on-one with a TSA agent as I'm getting ready to board the plane.
Yeah, I can tell you a couple things. Number one, one of the flaws in the current system is that you've got 77 domestic airlines, and each one of them we provide them the list of selectees, which are the people that we want to have them take a closer look at security, and then the no-flies, people we don't want to let on airplanes, period. And in the administration of those lists, I mean, there are airlines that are literally using printout sheaves of paper and actually manually running down the list alphabetically, trying to check boarding passes against this printout list. Some of them, in fact, most of the larger ones, of course, have it done on computers, but it's all being done in different systems with different internal corporate security rules and protocols. And so there's a total lack of consistency in how it's done. And this dates back to the fact this was actually put in place back in the mid-90s. And while it does still provide us some value, it's in desperate need of replacement. And the central issue here is, and we feel very strongly, and I think the airlines essentially support this and most observers support this, that this function should not be left to ticket agents who are doing, you know, nine other customer service functions in addition to doing the security check. It should be done at a central location by the government where you, if you're having problems, have a single point of contact to come and adjudicate any issues or mistakes or confusions about your name and another name on that may be similar to it on the list.
Mark Hatfield, please stay with us. We'd like to bring in another guest. Marsha Hoffman is staff counsel for the Electronic Privacy Information Center. She joins us from her office here in Washington, D.C. Ms. Hoffman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Can you tell me, what do you think about the Secure Flight program?
I think this program raises a number of privacy issues that the Transportation Security Administration still needs to address and hasn't yet in its information that is provided to the public about Secure Flight. The fact of the matter is there is a federal privacy law that requires agencies to let the public know what information is being collected about them when the agency collects information, and to give those people the right to access that information, to look at it, and to correct it or amend it if it's untimely or incomplete. There's also a requirement that the information be collected be relevant and necessary to the intended purpose for which it was collected. And the Transportation Security Administration has exempted SecureFlight from all of those requirements. It says that it will provide certain rights of due process, but it certainly is under no legal obligation to do so. And it's purely discretionary how any complaints might be responded to.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ms. Hoffman, your organization filed a Freedom of Information Act to get documents showing how this program had grown beyond its original aviation purpose, or rather the CAPS II program, the previous program. How does the Secure Flight program compare to the previous program known as CAPS II?
Well, there are a number of factors that are still the same. It's certainly an improvement that this program is going to focus specifically on trying to find potential passengers who are terrorists or affiliated somehow with terrorist groups, rather than putting every single passenger through a rather extensive background check. And so that's certainly laudable. But as I mentioned before, there are certainly privacy concerns that still need to be addressed.
I'd like to bring Mark Hatfield back into our conversation. Mr. Hatfield, your reaction?
Well, first of all, I think that that EPIC and groups like it are so important in our society to, you know, keep the debate open, keep the discussions active, and keep government accountable, because, you know, our founding fathers created a government that was accountable to the people and not the other way around. So I think that, first of all, the debate is healthy, and we've done things as recently as yesterday in terms of posting for public comment, going beyond what is required by law. For instance, the order that we have drafted and put out for public comment that we will have to issue in order to get the airlines to provide this data to us, that can be done unilaterally and without the solicitation of public comment. But we think it's important for people to have a look at it, have a month to mull it over, tell us what they think should be added, deleted, or changed, and we're going to take a hard look at that and incorporate appropriate changes. So, you know, Secure Flight is a very clean, focused, well-defined program. I think some of the references in that last exchange you had were to the predecessor, which was CAPS-2, which never really got off the ground. And in fact, it did grow beyond its original intent as a passenger pre-screening system focused solely on aviation. And I think that was part of its demise. It just it started getting attachments and extra features. It got too heavy to take off, as one quote I saw recently said. It looked great in the hangar, but it was too heavy for takeoff. So
I'd
we've
like
gotten
to,
back to the basics.
I'd like to get a comment from Marcia. Your reaction?
Well, from the materials provided to the public from the agency yesterday, it does appear that the mission of this program is more focused and more narrow, and that is certainly an improvement over CAPS too. I just hope it stays that way.
Let's jump to Jason, who is in St. Louis. Jason, you have a question.
Yeah, I have a question about the Safe Flight program that you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically has to go with aliases. What if you're a known terrorist and you decide to use a different name?
And it doesn't show up on the watch list? Is that what you
sure.
mean?
I guess so.
Okay.
What happens then?
Mr. Hatfield?
You know, that's a question that I have heard at virtually every congressional hearing. I hear it in most press conferences. Obviously, identity verification, identity theft, forgery and that type of thing, fraud, are aspects that need to be considered when looking at the overall effectiveness of this kind of system. So, number one, this system is not to be looked at as a barrier to terrorism. It's just one more of the hurdles. We've created a system of systems where there's one layer after another. So this is a layer. We're trying to make the hurdle as high as possible. And, you know, we've got a program that we're testing right now called Registered Traveler that actually uses a biometric identifier. It's probably, you know, the current technology that provides the greatest promise for eliminating that issue of alias or false identity. Identity, stolen identity, but you know, until we have a broader application and a publicly acceptable application of biometric identification cards, we're always going to have to figure out how to defend the system against the type of breaches that our caller just suggested.
Marcia, last comment, quickly.
I simply want to say that I think it remains to be seen how effective this program is going to be as conceived, because many of the elements are already things that are in place now that have clear problems that haven't been solved yet by TSA. So I'd like to see how the agency intends to take care of that.
Thanks to you both for speaking with us today.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mark Hatfield is the Director of Communications and Public Information for the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA. He spoke to us from his office in Northern Virginia. Marcia Hoffman is the staff counsel for the Electronic Privacy Information Center. She spoke to us from her office in Washington, D.C. Also in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. This has been Talk of the Nation from NPR News.